everybody. This is Robin Ayub from the Localization Fireside Chat, and welcome to another episode recording. Today, we are recording episode 134. I am honored and have the distinct pleasure to have with me Jacob Crockett, and we'll get to know Jacob in a second here. But I want to thank everybody for coming in and participating in this episode in various ways, YouTube, podcast, etc. The good news is we're averaging currently about 1,200 downloads per day. And hey, listen, I'm not, you know, Rogan or any one of those podcasters for what I do on a small scale. 1,200 downloads, it's a major achievement for me. I'm celebrating this. I know for some other people, it's only, it's too small. No, for me, it's big. Why? Is because very niche podcast, targeted, selected audience, and we're listened to now in 49 countries. That's another one. I just got the report this morning from the podcast platform that I host on. And it's very interesting to see the reaction on our conversations. I feel like it produces a lot of conversation. I get a lot of emails, a lot of comments back, and the viewers are, from the comments I'm hearing back, is they find the conversation very interesting, very easy to listen to, and always, 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 as casual as it is, there is a gem hidden inside of that conversation that people take notes of, which is good. Jacob, welcome to the conversation. I really appreciate having you with me. And I know it's late in the afternoon. Between the two of us, we can figure out how to record 45 to 60 minutes conversation. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Same here. Now, why don't we start by telling people, get to know you a little bit. Tell us, where are you from? What do you do? And your story, basically.
Yeah. So I grew up in Minnesota in the United States. You know, lived there till right before my senior year of high school, then moved to Indiana, went off to college. I went to Brigham Young University, studied statistics, really have just always been interested in figuring out how things work and having fun while doing it. I've had some jobs that I've been boring and I don't last very long there. So I've worked at a bunch of different places. Right now, I live in Utah. Mm-hmm. I moved here a couple of years ago from Minnesota. I live here with my wife. I have four daughters. So they're, you know, people ask me what my hobbies are, and I mountain bike early in the morning in the dark, and then I just hang out with my kids. and I started a business. And so it's, I have spent a lot of time. So I spent most of my career in data science. So AI before it was cool, and have always been really interested in how data can actually bring business value. A lot of tech often, you know, makes news headlines and, you know, there's really exciting things, but when it comes down to it, it barely affects the people who, you know, it barely affects most of us.
What problem are we trying to solve, right, Jacob?
Yeah. By the time it affects us, it's on our cell phone and we don't even realize that it's happening.
That's right.
And, you know, I spent a lot of time in healthcare. Mm-hmm. And there was one time I was talking with an executive at United Healthcare, and he had just come back from this big multi-day AI conference. And we were laughing because he said kind of the keynote was these people talking about some fancy algorithm they had made to detect when people should get a colonoscopy.
Okay.
And he was like, and the answer was, you know, when you're 40. And he was like, they literally built a Ferrari engine and put it on a lawnmower. Like, it's stupid. And he's like, and it costs millions of dollars for that team to do this stuff. Right. And the answer is like, great. Well, every doctor could already tell you that. Hey, when you're 40, you should start thinking about this. And so I just, spent a lot of time in healthcare, data science, worked in blockchain as well, right? All things crypto.
You've done the round there, Jacob.
I've bounced around, and kind of one theme to it has always been building teams. And, you know, like I mentioned, I love to work, especially when I'm working on things that I think are exciting and when I'm working with people that I feel like I'm on the same page with. And so through that and some random different experiences, last year started a company that helps teams hire people who align with their actual existing culture, not just what's written on the wall. And mm-hmm. So that's been really fun.
How's that going?
It's been great.
It's fun. I get it. But how, you consider yourself a startup right now? What stage are you in business-wise?
Well, for sure a startup, right? But I'm likely biased, having worked at a Fortune 5 company where there's, you know, 300,000 employees. Still very much a startup. We have, you know, over a dozen.
How did you transition from that? I mean, from you work from a large company with all the infrastructure in place, or all the assets are in place for a large company, to go to a startup. And I'm going through this right now, actually. That's why I'm asking.
I think it comes down to how do you work? You know, is it in a big company? Some people think this is a little rude to say, but there's a lot of fake work.
That's right.
There's a lot of like, oh, cool, we're going to have these meetings and we're
going to do things. They call it HREs, right? Is that what they call it?
and it's like, you know, you could spend 90% of your week on like coordinating and not actually getting work done or building new things or trying new things.
Or like that Ferrari on top of the lawnmower.
Yeah. Which, I mean, like, right, they spent millions of dollars. I doubt it was ever actually used in with people.
Yeah.
And so it wasn't that hard for me to transition, but I was kind of always on the fringes of a big, so I mean, I worked at a venture research firm that got acquired by United Health Group. And so we were always kind of our own little side project. And then I helped to start a company within United Health Group that grew super fast. I wish I had stock in that company instead of United Health Group, but
we all said that at some point.
Yeah. and so it wasn't that hard, but there definitely are some things you take for granted, right?
Yeah. Where,
like, being in the tech side is like, oh, here's all these things that there were teams, hundreds of people working on things that supported what I was doing and made it really easy. And then when you jump to your own thing, it's like, oh, well, what tools do I use? What people do I lean on? And it's a big learning curve.
But you know what, for me, the most thing that really, like, when you work for a large organization, you have like an accounting department, you got finance, you got whatever, you got HR, you got somebody to issue invoices for you, right? That's the basic stuff. And when you're on your own, you have to figure all this out. And for me, you know, I was on the phone this morning with in the US, you call them IRS. Here we have the equivalent of those called CRA, for instance, trying to figure out, like, how do I do my taxes? Like, how do I set it up? I have no idea. I don't know if it's the same in the US, but I think when brand new entry to the business world, I think the revenue agencies on any country you live in, they see it as, you know, green opportunity for them. This guy's not no experience. I'm going to see if I can put him through the ropes already.
Yeah, my accountant is worth her weight in gold.
That's right. You need one. We need one. Yeah.
She calls. I get letters from the IRS and I'll just take a picture and text it to her and say, do I need to do anything with this? And most of the time she's like, nope, I got it handled. And so it
saves you the trouble. So tell me, like, when you work for a large organization, what was the moment when you said, okay, guys, I got to go do my own? What pushed you to that point? Is it frustration? Is it opportunity? Is it combination of both? What do you think?
That's a really good question. I think early on, I went and right out of school, worked at a company called Ubiquity Networks. You know, if you're listening to this in an office, if you look up at the ceiling, it's like a 50% chance that the wireless router sitting there is a Ubiquity wireless router. And they, CEO had bootstrapped doing billions of dollars a year. And while the company was impressive, I was very quickly exposed to, like, oh, wait, the companies you usually look at and think, oh, this is amazing, everybody knows what they're doing. Like, it was so scrappy when I was there 11 years ago. And that instilled some confidence in me, more lack of confidence in the system. To realize, hey, look, nobody knows what they're doing. You know, this guy had a great idea and, you know, took a gamble and it worked out. Now, like, there's a group of people who've come together and they're making it work. But being exposed to a couple of those, and then I went and worked at this venture research firm that their whole thing was they kind of sat next to United Health Group, the biggest healthcare company, insurance company in the United States. And they would do all these research projects for them. And when some of them were so simple, but so useful for such little things. Right, like this idea that if you get people to walk more, they're healthier. And when they have to go to the hospital for any reason, whether it be, you know, they get the pneumonia or they get in a car accident, if they're walking, they get out of the hospital faster. And it saves billions of dollars. Things like that made me think, oh, cool, someday I want to do my own thing. And so it was just a matter of time.
Yep.
And then within that group got acquired by United Health Group. Then we had a bunch of research that we took and spun out into a company around type 2 diabetes. And I was part of the founding team there. That was really kind of the
final catalyst.
The catalyst to say, hey, I, you know, me and seven other people with a lot of help from other people, but it was really us that, you know, we took this, brought 10,000 people. The company was worth $1.5 billion within 18 months. And it was awesome. And then they brought in a bunch of, you know, MBAs, which they're all great, but we all the people who were there building it really got, you know, kind of pushed into the corner and told, hey, cool, here's your job. Go back to this job. And then, yeah, then that was the countdown had started for me was cool. I'm going to do my own thing. You know, what is it? How do I test out an idea to see and use kind of the experience and knowledge that I had to create something that was not just hand wavy, exciting, but really applicable and useful.
Yeah. And so your background seems to be like all healthcare related, and you started, you know, Hireline, and what, why is there a connection? Is it a completely different, because it's a horizontal service, right?
Yeah. So yeah, it has nothing to do with healthcare. Really. It's all with people. And kind of the biggest realization is, so one, every people now, you know, especially since COVID in the last five years, people care way more now about who they work with and why they're working than they ever have before. Like, you can't clock out at 5 p.m. and, you know, forget about your job until the next day, like we could before. And so if you hate your job, it affects everything. And that's number one. Number two is, with technology has always been causing this, but especially with AI, the barrier to entry on skills is going to zero. I don't know if it will ever get to zero, but it's becoming easier and easier to learn things. And that only increases the importance of being on a team where you feel like your values fit with the people.
But the ability to learn, though, is still fundamental, right? So the skills are one thing. Because if somebody doesn't want to learn, I mean, you can't force it.
Oh, for sure. And that it gets down to, you know, what motivates people and what do they value, right? And a lot of that is, you know, I value learning a lot of things. So I've always told people, hey, I'm a 6 or 7 out of 10 on a lot of things. I'm a 10 out of 10 on Googling and learning things quickly. And that for me has been the most valuable part in my career. But so that kind of the transition there was recognizing, hey, it's important that people align, because then all of, you know, and they're a fit for the culture and the team, because then all the HR buzzwords, you know, retention, engagement, productivity, they go in the right direction. But also at an individual level, people are just happier. And it makes a huge difference. And I had experienced, you know, times on teams where like it didn't feel like work and I loved it and it was amazing and it was so much fun. And I've then felt other times where I dreaded it. I had a lot of kind of internal conflict of like, do I just quit my job now? Like, I hate this. And realizing, wait, why are we okay with that being the status quo, that most people are disengaged at their jobs? And so really trying to take a different approach to, okay, the easiest way to find alignment on a team is when you're bringing people on.
Yeah, 100%, because you can map it.
Yeah.
You can map it. Now, I was just reminded as you were talking, long time ago, I had an executive mentor who told me, Robin, when you get a job or when you're working for somebody, well, there's one situation in particular where there's no exit. There's no way to solve it. I said, what is it? He said, if you think you're having like a bad deal working for this company and the company thinks that they have a bad deal hiring you, you can't fix that. He said, but if one of you thinks like, okay, the company thinks, you know, you're a bad hire, they probably do some performance, improvement plans for your PPR, and they fix a few things. They get you a little bit more training, coaching, etc. There's a possibility. That's what I'm saying. And if you think you had a bad deal, maybe you can talk to HR, and let's say you had a bad compensation or you're not happy with your compensation, and you can fix that. But if both entities think that bad deal is happening here, guys, I don't think there's an exit out of that. Did you ever come across that?
Well, I mean, short of them firing you or you quitting,
I mean, that's the solution, right? One of you has to exit.
I think, yeah, which I mean, we often view like the world, we view it as, you know, losing a job or quitting as like such a scary thing. And it is, because there's a lot of uncertainty, but also like there are, you know, I meet with lots of business owners and just lots of different people. And it's at least a handful of times a week that I am like, wow, you can make money in the dumbest ways. There are a million ways to make money. And if you need to pay your bills, there are a lot of ways to pay your bills. And you might as well do it in a way that you smile while you're doing it.
That's right. That's right. So how do you meet? How do you meet these people? You said you meet a lot of business people. How do you meet them? What's your method of connection?
Well, I'm all over LinkedIn. I spend way too much time on LinkedIn. I try to get out. One of the cool things about living here in Utah, Minnesota has a very, where I used to live, Minnesota has a very corporate kind of city culture, right? They have some of the biggest companies in the United States of, you know, older companies that have been there. You know, you have Target, United Healthcare, General Mills, Best Buy, all these big companies, Medtronic. Out here in Utah, it's very startup-y. And so there's a lot of,
do you like working with startup? Community. I mean, you're a startup, but you like working with other startups.
Yeah. Startups that have caught their stride and are growing are really fun to work with because they're way more malleable in terms of, and they want to build something good and they're willing to change as they're growing. Whereas other companies that have been around for a long time, they're like, hey, well, you know, it's working. Yeah, we might have these problems and it's not ideal, but you know, people still show up to work and we're okay replacing 20% of our workforce every year.
Oh, they're okay replacing 20% of, is that just right?
The turnover on average, 18 to 20%. That's what's expected. As soon as you get,
are you kidding?
You get into a, yeah, we have a customer. They have 1,400 employees. They hired 400 people last year, and they didn't.
So grow is that anything. Normal? Like, is it a coincidence, or is it like a one-off kind of thing? Is it like a standard operating procedure? Look, normal turnover, like I'm aware of, is between 10 to 15%. Those are if you're in a large company. If you're in a small company of like less than 100, you probably don't have that number, because 15 people like leaving a 100 employee company, it's a big deal.
Yeah. It really depends on the industry.
Yeah.
And the economy. Right now, turnover is lower in a lot of industries because people are afraid of getting another job.
Yeah. So yeah. Like they're not quitting as often.
Yeah. They're not quitting. They're just staying while they look for other jobs and just, you know, the quiet quitting and just not doing a good job. There, anytime a company has more than 50 people, we've found that unless it's weird, unless it's a special circumstance where either they're awesome and everybody loves it, or they have a bunch of B and C players and nobody wants to go find a job anywhere else. Other than those scenarios, they're almost always going to be hiring.
Yeah, so, yeah. And it sounds to me like you're solving the problem of finding the fit, not just hiring. You're not just hiring people. You're trying to hire people that are aligning with something. What is that something? How do you map it out?
Yeah. So that's really kind of where our magic comes in.
Is that the data that you talked about, the data science background coming in and mapping it out through data?
There's a ton of, you know, solutions out there is around, you know, like, cool, how do you map personalities onto a team?
Yeah.
But they all go off of some, you know, pre-generated notion of how things should fit together. The way that we do it is, you know, we show up to a company and as they onboard, we send everybody on the team a link that we say, hey, we're going to capture the culture as it exists here. And everybody on the company is invited to go through a 15-minute conversation with ChatGPT. It feels like ChatGPT is interviewing them. It's asking follow-up questions, digging deeper, empathizing, and it's totally anonymous, asking about their experiences, right?
Yeah.
Behavioral interview type questions. Tell me about a time you were proud to be a part of your team. Tell me about a time you went above and beyond. How were you rewarded or recognized? Tell me about a time there was conflict. What happened? All that. And we get everybody right out of this company that has 1,400 employees. We had, you know, 800 or 900 of them go through this and take it. They all take it. And then using AI, right, large language models, we're able to pull out from that what their core shared experiences and beliefs are, which is the culture. And then we're able to do two things with this, right? One, we're able to help them when they hire, find people who align with that culture on the team. And so it's not just off of what they think the culture is. It's what it actually is.
No, it's validated.
Yeah. And then as well, when they're onboarding, they input what their core values are, right? Their aspirational culture, what they want it to be. And so we're hiring people that fit in that gap between aspirational and existing culture. And then we also can show them how well they're living up to those core values with insight into we have a customer that, you know, one of their core values is sharpen the axe, like get better every day, like practice and learn.
Yep.
And it gives insight into, hey, are they actually doing that? What things could they be doing to better live up to that? And so it's fun though. It's fun to see. I mean, most people are excited. Some people get really angry when they see what their actual culture is versus what they think it is.
Are you aware or of any studies or metrics out there to say, you know, a growing company or a company that needs to stay ahead of its competitors needs to have a turnover of X, or has that been demonstrated? Let's say if we say, for instance, when I was in the telecom industry, I was very well aware, for instance, companies like Cisco, for instance, every quarter they fire like the bottom 30% of their sales force. And that was a common knowledge to everybody. It wasn't published anywhere. It wasn't something they would put on an annual report by any mean, but it was a common knowledge in the industry. Everybody knew that. Is there such thing? Is that a common practice somewhere?
I don't know any study. I haven't looked at any studies around it, but I mean, Amazon's famous for getting rid of their bottom 10% of performers every year. And that's not just sales. It's like tech and things. And so.
Yeah. Yeah.
It all right. That just shows what the culture is.
And correct.
How they want it to be, right. Where it's, you know, that it's high performance, low safety. Where, you know, you have a bad year and you're gone, which may or may not be right or wrong. The beauty of this is I don't believe in good or bad culture. I just believe in useful or not useful. If somebody wants to work 100 hours a week, that's great. As long as the rest of your team's also on the same page.
That's right. 100%. Now you've touched a little bit on this one in AI involvement in the skill assessment, etc. How often do you use, and how is it used now in various ways in your company? Do you use AI, and how is it being used?
Well, a lot. Like as within the product that people interact with, or as we're building the company.
Yeah, like as you know, you're hiring people. Like, is it part of the hiring process?
Yeah. So essentially, the conversation that people have with AI to benchmark the culture is very much, you know, AI driven. Then there's several different points throughout the evaluation process where it's, you know, very targeted use of AI, right? And I use AI very broadly. It's everybody knows it's a big buzzword. Coming from data science, I tell people data science is AI before it was cool. And so some people
say AI nowadays is a fancy way of saying, you know, we do database, I don't know, patterning or something.
Yeah, right. It's something like there's some algorithm, and you know, I've met companies who are like, oh, we use AI, and it's just like a formula in Excel, pretty much. And then there's other ones where it's like, oh, cool, you know, they're using large language models where, yeah, that's really nifty.
Yeah.
And like seems very different. And so yeah, we're using it all over the place. And then even with our own kind of internal development as well, we're using it all the time. I'd say I'm a very healthy skeptic and frequent user of AI.
That's right. I mean, that's you hit the nail on the head. You have to be a healthy skeptic on this one, because you can't take the input or the output that AI gives you for granted. We still need to be involved in assessing this and trying to judge it, good, bad, or ugly, and try to fix the input as well in some cases.
Yeah, I compare it to, so last week, for whatever, so right, I have four kids. My oldest is 8. My second is 6.
God bless.
And they're a blast. And most of the time, they have chores they need to do, and they unload the dishwasher, and so they can pull it out and they put it close to where it goes. You know, if they can't reach up into the cupboards, they just leave it on the counter, and that works okay. And my 6-year-old, for whatever reason, has gotten this idea in her head that it's really fun to do the dishes and to load the dishes from the sink into the dishwasher. And she is great at getting them from the sink into the dishwasher, but there's no promise that they will get cleaned at all because of the way that she loads them and that they're all set up. And sometimes you look and you're like, you just threw them in here. And that's often like AI, right? If you know how, if I were to stand there and coach her every little step and make sure it's working well, it would work out great. It would definitely look different than if I were to do it all, but it would work. Things would get clean. If I just say, hey, do the dishes, and I walk away and come back, and I, you know, then I just like pull it out, and without looking, I like reuse the dishes. Odds are I'm going to like have chunks of food still on it, because it doesn't do everything the same. And so there's very strategic ways that you can shrink the work to be done into chunks that then increases the likelihood that AI actually is useful.
Yeah, 100%. Absolutely correct. Now, I've seen somewhere that you mentioned that 88% improvement in retention for high churn sectors. So what was the, is it strictly matching the candidate to the culture that improved this number? Or is it something that the companies has to do on their side based on your input to make sure that we're adjusting internally and externally as the candidate move in?
So both somewhat. So right, the one you're referencing, so there's a dental group that we work with. They have a handful of, they have seven different practices. Now, anybody, you think of any kind of physical location, there's going to be a strong culture at each one of those locations. And the group itself has ideas of what they want their practice, their, you know, the parent company. But as they have these different locations, they were hiring and have really struggling with retention, because the idea of who was a good fit generally was not true across all of the different areas. And so what we are able to come and do is, right, they input what they want the company culture to be overall. And then at each of the locations, we're capturing the baseline. And then those teams, when they post a job to hire and the candidates go through their AI assessment conversation, we're then able to stack rank and say, okay, who's the best fit, the best aligned with the team that's here at this location, right? Mm-hmm. Because there's a world where in the dental industry, the dentist who's kind of the boss of the office, and some, they're really nice and kind and patient. And that's great. That's awesome. There's some where they're mean and abrasive. And if the people that you bring on are okay with that, you know, maybe they're having a little bit thicker skin, it works out great. But if you have somebody who needs to be at the warm and fuzzy office, and they end up at the, you know, at the, hey, I'm going to yell at you if you leave your chair out office, that doesn't work. And so not only were we helping them align better, but also the insight that they were getting as to, you know, their core values that they're trying to lead to, how do they all rally around something and talk about it? Mm-hmm. That those together really, it was kind of the magic that led to them having really high retention. And I mean, also like revenue going up across all of the offices, because.
Yeah, because it impacts everything, right?
Yeah, it impacts everything, right? You're gonna have people who are happy, they're gonna work better and harder.
Yeah. Now, one of the things that I always contemplated when I hear about culture fit is bias. How do you separate culture fit from bias? It's just, I don't know. I mean, I'm asking probably an obvious question here, because the obvious answer would be is like, okay, we don't do bias, but on a large scale, not just from your own perspective, from what you've seen in your career, how does that work, and how do you separate the two, and how do you prevent biases from happening?
Yeah, I think often when we think about culture, we think about the water cooler conversations, like, you know, hey, what sports team are you cheering for on the weekend? And, what's your favorite restaurant? Or, you know, like, what do you look like, both in like generally and actually, like, what does somebody look like?
Yep.
And that is a really shallow definition of culture. Culture, as we define it and as we try to look at it, is actually like the deeper motivations of an individual. You think of here in the United States, right? The political parties are very polarizing. You know, you can, if I say I voted one way and, you know, I have a friend who voted the other way, he gets upset. But we're still great friends, because yeah, we relate on other things. Like, we're both entrepreneurs and we want to provide for our families and like make a net positive impact on the world. And that's the more important piece of alignment. And so I often when you talk about bias, you can't get rid of bias. When people say that they do, I never believe them. That's a big red flag in my mind, because it's like, cool, well, you know, you probably don't recognize the bias that exists then. But there's things that you can do to mitigate bias where you don't want it. Because when you're looking for alignment, you're actually looking to introduce healthy bias, where we know what aligns with us and what we want, whether it be somebody who is more motivated by, you know, like making a positive environmental impact on the world or whatever it is. And we're trying to find people who fit with that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's at a level that is more deeper and meaningful than the traditional, like, oh, we want to avoid bias because we don't want to be prejudiced. And so there's unique ways that you can do that. You know, they'll do things like, you can't look at, you know, you don't want to know how old somebody is, or you don't want to ask them questions that could make you know if they have kids or not, or if, you know, what, if they go to a church, and if so, what church, or, you know, mosque or whatever.
Yeah. Religious biases.
Yeah. Whatever religious bias. And so, I mean, what we do to try to recognize and to avoid not useful bias is we don't include any of the information that could be used to be biased against as it's going through AI.
Try to get it as neutral as possible, basically. Focus on the talents, the skills, the work ethics, that kind of thing, right?
Even down to the name, right? If somebody sees Jacob Crockett, they can guess that, you know, I'm a white guy whose ancestors came from England, because that, you like, you know, that's a guess. They could be wrong. You know, I went to high school in Minnesota. There were two Crockett families at my high school, me and my brother. And then there was another family that was black and their last name was Crockett. And so yeah. You guess and you could be wrong. But if you ask ChatGPT, hey, what race is Jacob Crockett? It's going to say he's probably Caucasian.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so it can do things and infer. So we just leave out as much information as possible that could be used to bias.
No, Jacob, like the other way around, like yesterday I was interviewing Marsha Clark. She is a lady who champions women's issues.
Okay.
And she wrote a couple of books on them, and she's very active, and she's been doing this for many, many years. And I was really impressed with her conversation. I can't wait to post that. But one of the things that, you know, especially on that level, like not necessarily on other biases, but there's, you know, society's not equal yet in some people's opinions, obviously, in many ways, right? So you could say any group of people could say, you know, the world is not fair and we want to make it a little bit fairer for everybody. Especially on that front, on the women issue. Do you face any of that stuff, or do you deal with it in a neutral way, as you were mentioning earlier, when it comes to other things?
Yeah. So, I mean, as far as the software works, right, we do everything we can to eliminate bias, mm-hmm. and we still recognize that it's going to exist, especially in the world where we live in. And so if there's humans, bias exists. And so, mm-hmm. right, we do everything we can and continually working to mitigate that.
Yeah.
And we, you know, as we interact with customers, helping them recognize, hey, look, outside of this software, you are going to have bias as you hire. Like, you need to be mindful of what is useful bias and what is not. And, you know, there's bias and there's discrimination. And, you know, we are in no way endorse any sort of discrimination and prejudice, and recognize, hey, there's some bias that's useful.
You know, also what I noticed as well, like when you walk into a brand new company or a company that you're working with, happen to be, you know, you want them to be your customer, you want to work with them. And then you walk into them and you say, well, you know what? I noticed your culture is broken. Your leadership is messy. I think let's start with that. Do you ever coach upward? I don't know how you're going to call it, right? You coach upward. How do you do that?
Yeah. So we've lost potential customers when we come in and we say, hey, we're going to get accurate on what your culture is through this. And somebody will be like, hey, look, our CEO really does not, he thinks he knows, and it is not what he thinks it is. The culture here is not great. We can't go with you. Like, this will turn out really bad for all of us. But yeah, all of the time, right? And it's helping somebody recognize that, hey, the best way to make improvements is to get accurate and to recognize how things actually are, and, you know, kind of remove some of the emotion and, you know, understand that, hey, look, like, it's not all one person's fault. The culture is it's a collective thing. It's, you know, people, if a manager yells at somebody and nobody says anything, that has become like, it's allowed. That's part of the culture.
Yeah.
And so, but it also, it could have been anybody who said, hey, like, that's not okay to treat them like that. Or, you know, the same of somebody is walking and they trip and their coffee spills on the ground and everybody just looks at them and nobody gets up to help. Like, cool. But that's the culture now versus one person could jump up and it's changed it. And so, yeah, often we'll work with people where they will recognize, hey, look, our culture is not what we want it to be. there's, you know, people who are like, oh, our culture's great and we want it to be better. There's people who are like, oh, we know our culture's bad and we don't care because we're making money.
Or the other one is like, you know, I know my culture and when I see a fit, I trust my gut. You know, that whole gut feeling versus data that you started the conversation with the data, right?
Yeah, so yeah.
There's a lot of people out there that say, oh, I trust my gut. Don't worry about the data. When I see something and I think it fits, I know it fits.
Yeah. And I've personally hired like over 40 people in my career, which there's some people who've hired way more, but that's more than most people ever hire.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty good at hiring. I also, you know, have made mistakes where that have cost a company $1 million because I followed my gut and we hired somebody that on paper was amazing and was totally not a fit for the team and tanked the productivity of 8 people for months.
That's not good.
No, it's not good. And it happens all the time.
But those mistakes are happening every day, right? I mean,
yeah, all the time.
And this is crazy because, you know, and going back again to how we started the conversation, I did a LinkedIn post on this one. It's like the AI bot is trying to make the candidate look the best way they can by improving their CV, improving their LinkedIn profile, predicting the keywords that's supposed to be injected in your CV. You look at a CV, you mentioned earlier, you look at a CV, look, it's written by a professional writer, took their time, put it together, impressive. And then you've got a bot on the other side, on the recruiting side, is saying, okay, well, I realize now that this is fishy, something fishy going on here. So I'm going to evaluate it. It's like bot to bot. I'm just imagining in my head, right? It's cyber, right? It's like Star Trek movie. Bot to bot are talking and the two individuals supposed to be part of this conversation at Starbucks somewhere separately, having a good time, having a coffee.
It is now, right? I call it bloat or resume bloat. That there's just a ton of, you could go sign up for free. You don't even have to put in a credit card. And there's,
do you offset for that? Like when you're in your search, do you offset for that? Do you discount that?
Yeah. So we kind of skirt it entirely. There's tools out there that you can auto apply to hundreds of jobs a day for free right now. That is not at all helpful because now the hiring company also has a ton of unqualified people. But then there's also tools that will make your resume look like that's the perfect match. And so there's just so much on both sides, right? Of just automating and creating all this work. And some companies have automated and they look for keywords. Others just have a team of people who look at resumes literally all day long. Where we plug in is right before you even look at a resume, the applicant is getting a link to say, hey, we care that you're a fit for us and we're a fit for you. The first step is to go through this thing. And they go through that AI interview. That conversation, right? It's all typed. We've done voice for a bit. We went back to typed because it just works better. And then the company can log in and see stack ranked. Okay, who should we talk to first? And they can go down the whole long list and see the info on everybody, but it's who should they talk to first? And then the candidate as well can see, okay, they get a report saying, hey, we don't know if you're going to move forward with this company, but here's how good of a fit they are for you.
Sorry about that.
No, you're good.
Fix that.
Yeah, so it's one of the reasons that the hiring world has been broken for a while, right? It's hard for people to get jobs and it's hard for meaningful opportunities and it's kind of a losing game for most people. And so it really is addressing it in a totally different way. Swallowed down the wrong hole, huh?
My editing software has to work extra hard.
You good?
Yeah, I'm good. It just went the wrong way.
I'm sorry. That's the worst.
Oh, wow.
The problem is even drinking water doesn't fix it because
the water in Canada is bad. Yeah, so apologize.
Well, you're good.
This will be fixed. And we'll get a clean copy of Look at that. And I don't smoke. Maybe I should. All right. Let's get into it. Get back to it, I guess. What is a popular belief in hiring that you think is flat out wrong?
That's a great question. I think, so it's a little abstract, but when people think about hiring and the way they approach hiring, it's almost always a risk mitigation exercise. It is, here are the three things that we need a person to do at our company. And how do we find somebody who is least likely to not be able to do those things? And so really trying to find somebody that can do the job without causing problems with the most likelihood that they stay. And it's a very kind of scarcity mindset way of approaching hiring. When there's a world where the world we live in is there are tons of talented people who are eager to work and eager to work hard. And if you can find people who align with the culture and values of a team, even if they need to be trained up for most jobs, they will do amazing.
Yeah.
And so really the initial approach and framing of it, I think is broken for most companies and most people. And it also leads to companies keeping people around for a long time when they should get rid of them. If they're causing issues or they're making the culture worse or different things that because they're afraid, hey, we can't find somebody who can do that job. I was like, no, you can.
Yeah.
It's just easier to think that you can't.
Yeah. And you've interviewed people repeatedly. So what is one of the interview questions that you wish people to retire, to get rid of it?
I think anytime you ask somebody a question and you know what you want the answer to be, it's not a good question. Sort of like there's obviously some examples where that is good, but I'm a huge fan of behavioral interviews.
Yeah, I was going to say you tend to be behavioral, right?
Yeah, it's very much on, hey, what are the stories, right? Like the best predictor of future performance is past performance.
Correct.
And right, a lot of that is based off of the environment and such. But if you can understand the way that people work and the way they view things, that's often way more interesting than somebody asking like a question of, hey, you know, some people will do case studies and it's like, hey, well, how would you approach this?
Yeah.
And if you know, hey, here's the one right way and the rest are wrong. Yeah. I don't think it's a very good question.
No. Now, for people who don't know you and never been on my network before to meet you, how do they find you? Where do we get a hold of you if somebody's interested after this call?
Yeah, so LinkedIn, I spend way too much time on LinkedIn. So you can find me there, Jacob Crockett. You can also shoot me an email, jacob@hirealigned.com. Hire is H-I-R-E, aligned.com.
That's right. For those people who are connected to me on LinkedIn, if you need to reach out to Jacob, just let me know and I'll introduce you to him. He's connected to me. I think we are, aren't we? If we're not, we should do that. We should fix that. And so, yes, if you need to get a hold of Jacob, let me know. I'll do an introduction and we'll help you get a hold of him. At the same time, Jacob, I want to ask you one last question and we'll wrap it up. What did you think of this conversation? Except my almost passed out here a second ago. But
except you're
we'll edit that out.
Water down the wrong tube.
Yeah.
It's been awesome. It's always fun to talk with people who have a great depth and variety of conversations because of the way that they view the world. And so, and that I think is one of the beautiful things of, you know, technology and the internet is being able to be connected with people that otherwise you wouldn't come across them. Yeah, you'd never meet them. And that I think helps us all realize, wait, you know, humanity, we're not as different as we think we are.
No, you're right. We're almost so alike in everything.
Yeah.
Well, I want to thank you so much for joining me today, Jacob. I really appreciate it. And thank you again for your time. Anytime you want to come back to the channel, I really enjoyed this conversation. Hopefully we can do it some other time when we probably have a bigger update after you grow the company and you have a big announcement to make. Come back here and come back to the channel. We'll be happy to host you.
Thank you so much. It's been really fun to be on.
Absolutely. And for the audience, thanks so much for listening in. I really appreciate you being part of this conversation. And I will see you at the next episode. Thank you so much for listening in. Robin Ayoub, signing off. Bye now.